Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Ogletree Deacons Podcast. My name is Bud Bobber. I am a labor and employment lawyer with the Ogletree Deacons office in Milwaukee, and I'm joined today by one of my favorite Ogletree Deacons lawyers, Tim Kameen, a partner of mine here in the Milwaukee office. Tim, how you feeling today?
I'm feeling great. I feel like it's time for a podcast, bud.
Podcast would be perfect. That was on my to-do list. Let's do it. So today, Tim and I are going to talk about practical tips for an effective way to start an interview of an employee as part of a workplace investigation. And these should be useful to HR managers, other management personnel, or in-house lawyers who have the responsibility of conducting an investigation of an employee complaint or some other problem in the workplace. And really, our tips are focused on just the practical reality that what you need to do if you're conducting a workplace investigation is get to the truth. And there's a lot of barriers to that. I was especially happy to have Tim join me on this topic because he works with unionized workforces all the time for our clients and has a lot of experience trying to get the truth out of union representatives. Is that ever a challenge, Tim?
Yes, it can be a challenge. Absolutely.
So we're going to talk a little bit about that employee interview and give you some tips. Let's start with planning right on the front end. Before you even engage with the employee that you need to interview, I recommend that you spend a few minutes thinking about a conducive time and place for the interview. Remember, we want the employee to feel as comfortable as they can be talking with you and providing a free flow of information. So you got to be smart about when you're going to do this interview. For example, with hourly employees, you don't want to start this interview at the end of their work shift. They want to go home. So they're going to look for any reason to keep telling you, I don't know, I don't remember. They want to end the interview and go home. If you're talking with an hourly employee, probably should do the interview sometime during their workday when they're on the clock and getting paid to sit in the nice comfy chair in your office, and they'd prefer to sit there for a little while longer rather than go back to the workstation. So, you know, pick a smart time. Pick a good place too. Employees don't want to be seen as the workplace snitch. They don't necessarily want to be seen as sitting in the office of the in-house lawyer or HR talking to management. So, you know, you should choose an office that doesn't have an open window where other employees can see in and see that this interviewee is talking to you. Choose a private place where the employee will feel like, okay, the fact that we're having this interview and how long it might go and that type of thing is not really public knowledge. And in terms of the layout, when you do choose your office or a conference room, think about eliminating as much as you can the physical barriers between you and the interview subject. You know, a big foreboding desk or conference room table between the two of you, that can impede the flow of communication. If you're in a conference room, round tables are good. If you're sitting at a square or rectangle table, maybe sit around a corner. As opposed to on the other side, it doesn't have to look like you are opposite sides of a negotiation. And in terms of other things prior to starting the interview, what else do you think, Tim?
Well, I think one thing we want to be a little strategic about is how we sort of notify or summon the employee to come to an interview. And I think there's a fine line between giving a little bit of fair notice versus giving a lot of prep time or time for others to intervene and try to coach the person up on, you know, what they should or shouldn't be saying in an interview. And so to the extent that you can sort of bring the employee in cold, not knowing the interview was about to occur, I think there's an advantage in that. And also sort of summoning the employee discreetly. You know, I think back to the police dramas that I loved watching on TV as a kid. You don't want to blow the cover of your informant. You don't want that employee to feel pressure that other employees know I'm talking to management. I know you mentioned this in talking about the location of the interview, that they're not going to be observed by their coworkers being questioned. I think we also don't want them being observed by their coworkers being summoned and pulled into the interview.
And you know, there's this recurring theme about the right of the employee to have a coworker join him or her in the interview as their witness, or if they're in a unionized workforce, as their representative. What's the state of the law on that?
Yeah, the current state of the law on that, and these are known under the National Labor Relations Act as Weingarten rights. The current state of the law as of today is that a non-union employee does not have a right to have a third-party representative of any kind in the meeting, whether it's a representative, a coworker, a friend, a lawyer, no right whatsoever. But with regard to a union-represented employee, they do have the right, if they request it, to have a representative either from the union, a union steward, or a coworker present for the interview. If it is an investigatory interview, i.e. we're going to ask questions, which is the whole point of this, and if the result of the questioning could ultimately be disciplinary action. And the NLRB has interpreted this fairly broadly to mean even if we're interviewing somebody who is, we believe, maybe a witness to alleged misconduct, and who is not personally accused of engaging in misconduct, they may invoke this right as well, because they may perceive, reasonably so, that based on their answers, they could be disciplined for their participation in the interview, for example, if they're dishonest to the company in the interview.
So moving forward in the process, you've picked your time and place, you've discreetly summoned the employee to this private place to have the discussion. How do you start? You bring him in the room with you. I think you need to set the tone the right way. And if the manager is somber and too serious, the employee is going to know there's a problem. They're going to sense danger, and all of the walls and barriers to communication are going to go up. I think you should be friendly. This is an art, not a science, and it all depends on what your style is, of course, and what you think you need to do with that particular employee to get them to open up. But I think a smile goes a long way. You know, lots of studies show that smiling facilitates communication, maybe lets down the barriers of the other person, that type of thing. I also think you should show a little interest in the employee before you plow into the business of the actual interview. Why not ask the employee, hey, how you doing today? How you feeling? Not only is that courteous and show a little interest in the employee, it could be helpful too, because sometimes when people later regret and they want to backtrack on something that they told the company in an interview, sometimes you'll hear, well, I wasn't really feeling well, or maybe even more than that. Maybe they'll say, yeah, I was under the influence of a whole lot of cold medication that I had taken. So I wasn't clear. I wasn't focused. I was kind of sleepy, that kind of thing. So you can really head that problem right off at the pass on the front end with the simple question, how are you feeling today? And getting a response from the employee that's probably along the lines of, okay, yeah, everything's going pretty well. I think it's probably then important that you tell the employee why they're there. They are going to be craving some information about what is this all about. If you've done a good job summoning them discreetly without a lot of advance notice, they probably don't know what it's about. So I think you should tell them, and you owe them some explanation, and tell them that you asked to meet with them because you're looking into a concern that was raised with HR. Or with the company, if you got to be more general. I don't think you want to give them too many details. You don't want to give an employee a roadmap as to what the scope of this is. Some employees might tell you more than you thought you were asking about. So, you know, don't put any limits on the front end by saying, hey, I'm looking into what Jim said to Joe last Friday afternoon on 3rd, you know, in the warehouse or some such thing like that. Just tell them, I invited you to come meet with me because I'm looking into some concerns that have been raised, and it's important that I talk to a variety of people. And so I'm going to need to ask you some questions. And I think that's about all that you owe the employee. And I think that's all that is smart to tell them on the front end.
And then I think we need to discuss a few sort of procedural warnings or recitations of rights, so to speak, both to preserve the organization's rights that we may have, as well as the employee's rights under the law. And, you know, initially we'll suggest if there's legal counsel involved, whether it's in-house counsel, outside counsel, involved in participating in the interview, or even sort of directing behind the scenes of preparing a script for the interview that the interviewers will use, we've got concerns about attorney-client privilege and work product privilege that the organization has that we don't want to inadvertently waive. And so we're talking here about what's known under the law as Upjohn warnings. And Upjohn is a case that was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1981. And interestingly, the whole case surrounds an internal investigation by an employer. The employer was alerted by outside auditors that there may be some evidence of improper payments by the company to certain foreign government officials. And so the general counsel for Upjohn wisely initiated an internal investigation, just as we're talking about today. And interviewed through questionnaires and through some direct interviews, like approximately, I think it was in the 80s, dozens of employees, managers in foreign locations, and determined that there was some evidence of some improper payments. And so Upjohn did exactly what we would like them to do, which is to self-report these violations to the U.S. government, which conducted its own investigation. Ultimately, the IRS demanded all of the documentation and all of the information gathered in the investigation. And Upjohn defended much of its work in terms of attorney notes, scripts, things that were prepared by counsel, communications to counsel, as being protected by the attorney-client privilege and or the work product privilege. And so we've got a body of law that came out of this case in which the Supreme Court said, yes, we want organizations, even from low-level employees, to be able to share information about what's happening with counsel without fear of disclosure, so that counsel can provide the organization with the advice that we want them to get, which is, we have a problem, we need to fix it. And so what we want to do is, when we sit down with an employee who's not an officer of the corporation and doesn't have the right to waive any privilege, we want to inform them directly that if I'm counsel, I am the counsel for the organization, I'm not your personal attorney. And the organization has rights to maintain the confidentiality of our conversation. And so you're not to disclose this to any third party outside of this room, the contents of what we've talked about. And you should also understand that the company, if they should choose to, they can waive that privilege and disclose our conversations. You should be aware of those things. Another sort of legal warning that attaches in the union environment, where we're going to be interviewing a union represented employee on any subject that pertains to the union employer relationship, whether it's a grievance that we're investigating. And, you know, even in a sexual harassment type context, we could also have a grievance under the labor contract that sort of is a parallel proceeding with the underlying sexual harassment complaint. And so whenever we have a grievance or an unfair labor practice charge before the NLRB, and we want to interview a union represented employee, we have to give them sort of another type of sort of Miranda warning, if you will, under a case known as Johnny's Poultry, which we need to inform the employee that it's purely voluntary that they speak with us. We need to inform them of exactly the issue that we're investigating. We need to inform them that if they choose not to speak with us, that they will not be retaliated against in any way for refusing to talk to us, because that's their right in this context. And then also to just really have the whole environment to be free of any type of coercion or intimidation.
And for all employees, not just union represented employees, I think there's an important and easy step to take on the front end of the interview that a lot of employers don't think of. And that is to emphasize to the employee his or her obligation to give truthful answers and also to give complete answers. And it's easy to do. You know, you say to the employee, because I'm doing this investigation, it's really important that I find out the facts and get to the truth. So that's really what your obligation is. You have to give me truthful answers. And then I think the best way to conclude that that comment is to get the employee's commitment. I mean, ask them directly, will you give me truthful answers? What are they going to say? Of course they say yes. And when you commit somebody to give truthful answers, you're more likely to get truthful answers. Then you can do the same thing on completeness. And you can say, it's also important that everybody I talk to give me complete answers. Don't just give me small little pieces of a partial answer and feel like, you know, that was truthful enough. I really need people to give me complete answers. Do you understand? Yes. Will you do that? Yeah, sure I will.
And I think in conjunction with that, it's also important to let the employee know the reality, which is if you learn that they are not truthful and forthcoming with you in that interview, they could be subject to disciplinary action for that failure.
And on the flip side of that, because that's kind of a, you know, a harsh...
It's the bad cop.
It's the bad cop. The good cop then is to remind the employee that everybody that participates in this investigation and gives us truthful information and complete information is protected against any kind of retaliation. There can't be any retaliation from the company or coworkers or anybody else. And maybe sometimes you have to explain to people what you mean by retaliation. You all have a sense of what that means, but some employees don't. Sometimes I like to refer to it as backlash. You know, you can't get any backlash from anybody. Anybody can't make your life at work miserable with any kind of backlash or retaliation because you participated with the company. Do you understand that? And have the person say yes. And, you know, you can tell them right there, if anything like that happens, I want you to come back and tell me because I'll look into it and I'll fix it because we won't stand for it. That's company policy. And to some extent, that's the law as well.
And Bud, do you have any ideas of trying to sort of head off the idea that the employee can come back later and say, I didn't understand the questions you were asking me?
Yeah, this is just like when we take depositions and we are questioning a witness in a deposition, you should do the same thing with your employees. You got to tell them right on the front end. If there's anything I ask you that you're not sure if you understand the question, will you please tell me that? And again, you get somebody's commitment. Sure. Yeah, I will. Then later, whether it's weeks or months or years later in a proceeding, if they say, oh, I didn't understand that question, they're going to be subject to some doubt because we're going to be able to say, well, wait a minute. You know, we asked you on the front end of the interview, if you didn't understand the question, you'd let us know and you promised us you would. And that can be helpful. So in review, we talked about a variety of things, but I just want to leave everybody with the high points. You know, pick a good time and place for the interview and give the employee some privacy, both in the location and in how and when you summon them to be interviewed, so that this is as private as possible. That'll facilitate communication. Also, get that employee's understanding and stated commitment that they'll tell the truth and they'll give complete answers. And if you've laid all that groundwork, then you're ready to jump into your actual substantive questions really as well set up as you can.
All good advice. And I think now you're ready to get into the substantive nature of the interview and get to the facts that you need. And hopefully we'll find some time to talk about how to wrap up the interview once you've concluded that.
Let's do that next.
That's a great idea.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.